It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you very much for joining me as we move into the wonderful month of March. Happy March, everyone. So, last week I talked about Africa, and I did quite a bit on how no one is asking the Africans what they ought to do with wildlife and how they ought to run things. I received a large number of comments, particularly some who said that the Africans aren't in danger from wildlife and that that is made up. And that surprised me because in Africa, believe it or not, the villages live in fear of lions, elephants, leopards, crocodiles, rhinoceros. This is not Hollywood. This is real life. And so when I suggested last week that we ought to ask the people who actually live there to have a seat at the table, actually a seat at the head of the table, as to how they want to manage wildlife and how important hunting is to them from an economic endpoint and also from a game management point of view, I did not mention, but I will now, that when you go into a village and you meet the mother of a person, you meet the mother whose child has been eaten either by a lion or found in the stomach of a crocodile, it changes your impression. So when I said that the ivory towers of the world are trying to shut down hunting and ban big game imports, they are. And they've been very effective at it. On the other side of the equation, if there is not commercial hunting in Africa, then the villagers, by necessity, are going to have to kill the animals themselves. When you are in the bush in Africa and you're raising a meager crop at best as it is, and a herd of elephant comes through overnight and wipes your crop out, or maybe even just simply walks through your village and destroys most of your village, you don't have a lot of sympathy for the elephants. Or as has happened, when a pride of lions comes in and takes members of the village out, which happens, not make-believe, it's real, you don't have a lot of sympathy for the lions. So hunting in Africa has been a way to, first of all, have animals be afraid of humans, but second of all, a very effective way of managing their populations. So I'm not going to do a whole other show on what I talked about last week, but the reality is the real world outside of the cities in Africa is you are living with elephants in much of Africa. You're living with elephants and rhinos and hippopotamus and lions and leopards and crocodiles, all of which will kill you. We don't have that in the United States. The closest thing we really have right now are mountain lions. And if you think what happened in Colorado last year when it was on the ballot to ban mountain lion hunting in Colorado, and it was the big, it was way, way ahead in the polls, 30 points up in the polls. Urban Denver and urban Boulder, where unfortunately so many bad policies come from, they were championing this, no more mountain lion hunting in Colorado. It's cruel, it's inhumane, etc. Well, then a few people realized, wait a minute, people are killed by mountain lions. Hikers are mauled. Turkey hunters are often mauled. And children have been taken by mountain lions. These are animals that we don't do well with when they're in close proximity to us. At the end of the day, due to a very, very organized campaign, well articulated, it said, without the hunting of mountain lions, we are placing people at risk. the referendum was failed badly. It lost by, I think, 25 or 30 points, the referendum to ban hunting of mountain lions in Colorado, because the public realized, all of Colorado realized, without hunting of mountain lions in Colorado, we are going to have a situation where more people are going to be put at risk because mountain lions are going to lose their fear of humans. So this is not just an Africa issue. It's a world issue. The misconceptions of how hunting is used for wildlife management and how hunting reduces human wildlife conflicts. So moving on from that, I just wanted to close that loop for those of you who contacted me and said, you know, why do we have hunting in Africa? It's a much bigger subject, but in part we have hunting in Africa because the people in the villages who live in Africa are demanding it for their own salvation. What's going on in Saskatchewan? Well, it's cold. They've had more snow, but there is, as I learned last week at the Safari Club International show, there continues to be a movement to limit Americans coming hunting in Saskatchewan. Manitoba, as you're well aware of from this show, has taken a pretty hard line on Americans coming bird hunting. Saskatchewan is moving in this direction. I visited with several people who are involved in the discussion, and they feel that Saskatchewan will go at some point in the next year or two to a one-week non-resident hunting license, and that will be it, which is the same as what Manitoba has put in place. The reason Saskatchewan's moving forward on this now is that so many Americans got mad at Manitoba and left Manitoba, stopped going because they could only go for a week, and have gone to Saskatchewan. So as was predicted here and elsewhere, the amount of hunters going to Saskatchewan and leaving Manitoba was going to happen. Manitoba hunting license sales are down. Saskatchewan's are up. And it's the fact that Americans are not going to put up with Manitoba's restrictions. Well, now it looks like Saskatchewan is going to follow suit. And so if you, as I have for decades, more than I guess I'd like to think, gone to Saskatchewan and Manitoba in the fall and enjoyed some of the greatest country in all the continent, you're now going to be restricted in doing so, partially because too many of us decide we want to do it, but also just as a backlash, which is occurring, frankly, against humans. And it's unfortunate, and it started long before President Trump. The Manitoba regulations were put in place when President Biden was president, but we are seeing a shift. And a big part of that shift also, as I've mentioned on the air, is due to outfitters. No longer do you have just people like me tromping around in my truck trying to find a place to hunt with my dog and a friend. Now you've got professional outfitters all over the country, of countryside of Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta, who have set up lodges, and they'll handle 10 or 12 clients at a time. You arrive on a Wednesday, you get off the plane, you're right in the field. There's scouts working for the guides who go out and scout the fields for the next day. There's no skill involved. You just simply get off an airplane and meet your guide, and he takes you to where the birds are. This has changed things fundamentally. There always was some outfitting, but it was very, very small. Now there's outfitting on steroids all across the Canadian prairies. And so the decline in the interest of Canadians in having Americans come is also directly tied to the outfitting business, which of course is largely driven by Americans. So I'll be back in just a moment with much more on the Great Outdoors Show. When I do, I'm going to talk about plastics. I'm going to talk about the Great Salt Lake. And there's also an interesting statistic about climate litigation. I guess the lawyers always win in the end. This is Charlie Potter, the outdoor voice of Chicago and America, WGN Radio, and now a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you for being with me. As I mentioned at the top of the show, we ring in March this morning, first day of March. Hope it's a great month for you. We certainly have had a pretty good February. If you like to ski, if you like to ice fish, you've loved this February. March, as I'll talk about next week, has always been sports show month. Unfortunately, that now is going the way of the dodo bird. Very few of them left, and those that are left, with the exception of the big ones like Safari Club, they're really not worth going to, sad to say. So what is going on with the Endangered Species Act? Hopefully something. One of the elements of the administration in Washington has been to try to figure out how to have the Endangered Species Act be more workable and not be such a unintended burden on landowners. And what is front and center on this right now is the sage grouse, which, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago in North Dakota, there actually are no more greater sage grouse. They're gone. Hard to believe. So in Wyoming, Idaho, other parts of the West where there's sage grouse, they are interacting with agriculture as they always have. They're interacting with ranching as they always have. And the Endangered Species Act says if you have a species that is endangered, everything changes and you got to change all your practices, et cetera, et cetera. It is a well-intentioned and has been in existence now for over 50 years. It's a very well-intentioned piece of legislation that on the ground often does not work well. It's sort of the broad brush approach. Everything has to change the moment something is listed as an endangered species, even if practices on the land have nothing to do with what has occurred. As in the case in Idaho, as sage grouse populations continue to fall, ranchers are facing increased restrictions on how they can graze. And I'm not advocating for ranchers here. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that in many cases, the grazing practices haven't changed now for a generation or more, maybe two generations. And sage grouse thrived, and all of a sudden they're not. But it's not because ranching practices changed. It's not because grazing practices changed. And yet under the Endangered Species Act, all of a sudden you can't graze certain areas. You can't graze at certain times of the year. You can only have so many head of cattle in the area. But it's like having a heart attack and treating the ankle. That's not what has caused the demise of the sage grouse in so many areas. It's not a radical change or any change in the ranching practices. It's other elements, whether it is the drought, whether it's West Nile, whether it's the increase in predators. It's a combination of things, but the Endangered Species Act doesn't think about that. It's only structured, oh, we've got an endangered species, everything has to change or stop usage. And so one of the things that's underway in the administration, Department of Interior, is how do we not have such a broad brush approach? How do we recognize that within an endangered species, There are certainly lots of different elements at play. And in the case of sage grouse, we in fact may be causing other harms that we didn't recognize by trying to apply a strategy that actually is not the reason that sage grouse are declining. But under the law, we have to go in and cut grazing and do all these things. So we're going to see what happens. There's no doubt what will happen is we will have incredible lawsuits. The moment the Endangered Species Act is changed, all of the usual culprits will jump in and sue to stop that change. But I think it's fair to say we need a streamlining of the Endangered Species Act. We've got decades now of information as to how to make it better. The Endangered Species Act is an extremely important piece of legislation. But as with everything, over time we learn, and there are ways to make it much more efficient. And hopefully this Congress can do that, even if they try. I know the lawyers will try to stop them from doing that, but hopefully we can make some progress. On the subject of lawyers for a second, it is unbelievable to look at how many lawsuits there are in the world of climate. Currently, according to the Wall Street Journal, the headline was "A Failed Climate Coup in the Courts." There are over 3,000 climate change cases that have been filed today in existence. And that's around the world. And more than 60% of these are being litigated in the United States. 3,000 cases, most of them class actions, worth hundreds of billions of dollars in totality, tying up the U.S. court system. It's an example of how we have gone from a legislative society when it comes to conservation to a litigious society when it comes to conservation. Our courts are choked with lawsuits. The lawyers make out great on this if they win all these class action lawsuits. We, the taxpayers, are the losers because we got to pay them. So just a thought on that for a second. Maybe when we talk about Endangered Species Act reform, we also ought to talk about some kind of reform to rein in so many lawsuits that are tying everyone's hands in our ability to go forward managing the land. So for today, I'm not going to have time to get to plastics, but I promise you I will next week. The great debate coming, plastics or paper? I'll tip it off. Let's go paper. Thanks so much for listening this morning. I appreciate it very much. Hope you have a great week in the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.